comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be. All around this gorgeous planet we call Earth, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. I know you could be doing a million other things, but you chose to be here, and I appreciate that. I'm here because you have a right to know. I'm here because you matter. And tonight, I'm going to be talking about the hottest story in our solar system at this present time. The successful landing of the NASA Mars Science Laboratory on Mars, more commonly referred to as the Mars Curiosity rover. Now, even if you watched all of this live, you watched the whole event live on NASA's live streaming feed, as I did, there are important things about this whole event that you probably don't know. They are things that you'll never hear on mainstream media. I guarantee you they are never going to bring this up on mainstream media. So strap yourself in and hang on, because we are going to launch into 2 hours of more discovery than you can possibly imagine. I also want to remind you that we are listener supported. Some of you are brand new to The Kevin Smith Show. You don't know that we are 100% listener supported. Now, what that means is I don't play commercials. We don't sell items and products on this show, except, I mean, to be honest, to be fair about this, once in a while we do have a seminar that we sell tickets to, but it's our seminar, okay? Things like that. It's all related directly to the show. So we don't sell you products. We're not trying to get you to buy more Fords or, more Pepsi, things like that. We're listener-supported. And I think when you support this show, you should get the benefit of some extra stuff. And so we have our members community for that. When you join, it's only $7.50 a month, $7.50. That's 25 cents a day. And when you join, you will have access to all kinds of goodies. For instance, you'll be able to watch this show live every night. And on a night like tonight, you'll be very glad you could watch this show live. If you happen to miss watching the live show, and this is a great benefit, especially for those who have odd working hours or who live in other parts of the world where the time zones are just not convenient for watching live, this show, the video of this show is captured, and you can watch it for the next 24 hours. The audio of this show is turned into a podcast, and it goes into the archives. We call those K-Pods, and there are literally thousands of hours of listening in the archives right now. And so you get access to that. You get forums, you get chat, you get the video galaxy, and lots of other stuff. So if you're not yet a member, fix that tonight, okay? We'll be back right after this. Why? All right. right. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and our look at the hottest story in the solar system right now. The hottest story in the solar system is this successful landing of the Mars Curiosity rover. Its official name is the Mars Science Laboratory, MSL. And some of you stayed up on Sunday night and you watched that unfolding drama live as it happened. And it really was a drama. I mean, it was a real-life drama, especially if you have any interest in science and technology, because what was being attempted in some ways was unprecedented. The size of this rover, I mean, this is a rover basically the size of an automobile. It's the biggest rover that has ever been sent into space, and the biggest one they ever have attempted to land on a planet, any nation. And it's unprecedented because of the equipment that's on it, and because of the incredibly complex landing procedures that they had to devise because of the size of this rover. And you probably have by now seen the animations of how it would look if you could watch it as it landed. And you know, it hits the atmosphere of Mars. It's traveling at about 12,500 miles an hour. The heat shield heats up incredibly, and then it jettisons the heat shield in the parachute opens, and then after a little bit the parachute drops the capsule, and the capsule fires 8 rocket engines, and it's lowering itself down toward the surface, and then it drops on cables below it, about 20 feet below it. It drops the rover down, and the rover then extends its wheels down. And just as the wheels touch down on Mars, the cables are cut and the capsule with the rockets flies away to a safe distance and crashes. Incredibly complex. Nobody had ever tried anything like that before. And so there was a real drama. And from the time the capsule entered or encountered the atmosphere of Mars, from then until touchdown is 7 minutes, but it takes 14 minutes for its signals to get back to Earth. So as we watched it live and they were reporting that it had encountered the Martian atmosphere, we were hearing that 14 minutes behind real time. So when they reported to us that they had the data that showed that it had encountered the Martian atmosphere, that was 14 minutes ago. And then each stage of that, as the parachute deployed, they reported it. Well, yes, but that happened 14 minutes earlier. So the point is that by the time they reported to us that they had touched down, the Mars Curiosity rover would have either touched down or would have crashed 14 minutes earlier. Is that incredible? So everybody was on pins and needles. Everybody was just nervous about, you know, whether this was going to work or not. Everybody there, you could see them in the control room, and they were just on pins and needles. And when the word came that they had confirmation that the Mars Curiosity had touched down and it was safe, it was a good landing, and it was almost right on target, cheers erupted. It was just fantastic. Well, I watched late into the night and early into the morning because they had press conferences later, and I wanted to see everything that happened. big question with this new mission is, will NASA be giving us straight information with this new Curiosity mission? And I think the first answer that we're going to get is the masthead or logo on the top of the web page at NASA for the Mars Science Laboratory. And what we see is they give us a picture, obviously an artist rendition of this rover sitting on the surface of Mars, but the Mars we see is heavily red filtered. So I think there's the first clue as to whether they're going to be really truthful with us or not. Probably there will be no change in the level of truthfulness coming out of NASA in this mission. But I do want to congratulate all of these folks down at NASA. You know, all of these scientists and engineers, all kinds of engineers, computer engineers and mechanical engineers, electronic engineers, all kinds of space scientists, and I want to congratulate them, but I also want to congratulate all of the scientists and engineers around the world who worked on this project. You know, NASA doesn't build these things. They design it, but they don't build it. They contract it out. And it's been built by people in nations all over the place. There are all kinds of parts and all kinds of equipment on the Mars Curiosity rover built from you know, nations around the world. And so I want to congratulate every single nation and every single scientist or engineer that had anything at all to do with this mission. The mission has only just begun, but it's an incredibly complex machine, and it's a machine that, as I say, was built by people around this world. I was a little bit disturbed by some of the statements that I heard in the press conferences. One of the statements that I heard, and, you know, honestly, I should have written this down. I cannot remember if it was the director of NASA, Charlie Bolden, or if it was the director of this mission. I can't remember exactly who said it. But it was said that there are other nations involved with this and that they are on Mars right now because of the United States. Well, I am, of course, being an American, quite proud of NASA in this accomplishment, and I'm quite proud of our country in this accomplishment. But on the other hand, let's be honest and truthful about it. NASA didn't build this thing. It was built by people all over the world. Americans, yes. Many, many Americans worked on this project. But it was the equipment that made this possible was built by people all around the world. Scientists and engineers working diligently to put this thing together so that it could be launched. And, you know, the truth is, on the one hand, perhaps you could say they are on Mars because of the United States. Yeah, because the United States put up the money and did the project. But we are on Mars because of them. And we don't need to lose sight of that. We are on Mars with this project, with this mission, because of those people. Those people all over the world participated in building this thing. You couldn't be there if it weren't manufactured, if it hadn't been built. And so you have engineers and you have scientists all over the planet that worked on this thing. And we are on Mars because of them, just as it can be said they are on Mars because of us. It was a partnership. And I think that is an important factor to keep in mind. I think in order just to keep all of the facts straight, we have to bring that up. NASA's got some smart scientists and some really smart, capable engineers. No question about that. And I'm in no way diminishing my congratulations of NASA, because in the final analysis, NASA put it all together. I mean, they are the people who coordinated it all. They are the people who administered all of the programs. They are the people who did the launch, and they are the people who did the flight controls and put this thing right on target. So in no way am I diminishing my congratulations of NASA. I just want to make sure that the contributions of everybody else is not diminished as well, are not diminished as well. And we need to realize that. We need to realize this happened as a cooperative effort with people all over the world. But NASA certainly is to be congratulated. And I was watching this, and I was cheering right along with them when they said we have touchdown. And I was excited when finally the first two pictures came back from the Curiosity. Its camera pointed towards the ground, and we see a shot in front and a shot behind the rover. Nothing really exciting about it, except it's you can see that the cameras are working, and all you can see is black and white low resolution photographs of the Martian soil right there where Curiosity landed. But I was cheering right along with them. I was excited about it. And am excited about it. I think it's going to be a fantastic mission, and we will get some information out of this mission. The Curiosity is, or the Mars Science Laboratory, is it's got some big things to accomplish, and there are some big things we need to know about it, and then some big things in the background as well. This is the biggest, most advanced suite of instruments for scientific studies ever sent to the Martian surface. This is a lot of stuff. I mean, this is a lot of science that's supposed to be done by this rover. It is supposed to detect the chemical building blocks of life, in other words, forms of carbon on Mars. Now, honestly, I have to admit, I'm a bit surprised that that hasn't been done already. I think it has. But maybe I'm wrong about that. But anyway, that's one of its missions, is to detect the chemical building blocks of life, the forms of carbon on Mars. It's able to travel up to 90 meters or 295 feet. Per hour. Now, that doesn't sound fast, but compared to other rovers that we have sent, this thing compares like a Formula One racing car. That's a lot of feet per hour for one of these rovers. Now, remember, one of the reasons for that is because of the 14-minute delay in radio signals. So once they decide to send it a certain direction, if it doesn't have a really clear path for about 295 feet, they're not going to tell it to go 295 feet because they can't control it in real time. When they send a signal for it to turn right so many degrees, it takes 14 minutes for that signal to get to the rover. So 295 feet per hour is that's a lot of feet per hour under those conditions. It carries a radioisotope power system that generates electricity from the heat of the plutonium's radioactive decay. Now, that was very, very controversial among some folks. There are a lot of folks who really did not want this thing to be launched and sent to Mars because it is nuclear powered. But this is not the first nuclear powered spacecraft that we have. We have a whole bunch of satellites up there that have plutonium power supplies. And, you know, so this, I understand people being nervous about that and not wanting that. I'm not sure what I think about it. On the other hand, it's not the first time. And in fact, it's not, when we, the United States, sent our first nuclear-powered package into space, we were not the first to do it. And you're going to find out tonight some rather amazing things about this whole raft of information about rovers and about landers, spacecraft landing on other heavenly bodies. And in fact, that's going to be a whole lot of what we focus on here tonight. Would you be surprised if I were to tell you that the very first nuclear-powered craft sent into space and landed on another heavenly body was actually done by the old Soviet Union? So I will tell you that tonight, whenever I refer to the Soviet Union, I may use Russia and Soviet Union interchangeably, but I'm referring to a period of time when the Soviet Union was in existence. The very first people to use nuclear power for a lander was the Soviet Union. It was the Russians. They were the first people to do this. And they did it a very long time ago. They did some other stuff a very long time ago as well. And we're going to get into that when we come back. And the reason we're going to get into that is the whole issue was sparked by a comment made by an extremely high official on that live feed. All right, we'll be back right after this.
To the Kevin Smith Show, a place where you can get information that's out of this world.
You don't know why.
All right, welcome back. For those watching, I was back before I was supposed to be. Anyway, talking about this Mars Curiosity rover and this amazing successful mission, landing it on Mars, and not just landing it on Mars, but landing it really very close to their target location, almost a bullseye, just phenomenal. As I've said, this is a really, really sophisticated piece of equipment. And actually, it's a package of many, many pieces of equipment, all kinds of science experiments and labs, and it's just phenomenal. And NASA is to be congratulated. I also told you that I stayed up and watched the interviews and the press conferences and so forth afterward, and saw and heard some interesting things and some things that are a bit disturbing as well. Shortly after the landing, We had been shown, those of you that watched that, remember this, we had already been shown the photographs that had come down from Mars. Two shots, that's all, nothing spectacular, except it shows that the cameras are working and they are, the rover is sitting on the surface as it's supposed to, and everything is A-OK. But then shortly after that, they interviewed two or three people. There was the anchor for the interviews was a lady. She did a great job. She interviewed two or three people, and one of the people she interviewed is somebody by the name of Dr. John Holdren. Now, Dr. John Holdren is the director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. He is President Obama's science czar. And those who are watching, you just saw and heard Dr. Holdren make the statement that the USA is the only nation to ever put a lander on any other planet. And we'll deal with that in just a moment. But you need to know a few things about Dr. Holdren. Who is he? He is a face that a lot of you have not seen before. He is, you remember, shortly after the election of Barack Obama, shortly after the inauguration, he put a panel together to take a look at NASA and to see if there are any changes that need to be made. This is the man who chaired the panel. And he, more than anyone else, is responsible for canceling NASA's manned missions to the moon and to Mars. Now, those missions were already planned. Those missions were already, the spaceships were already designed and early stages of construction already going on. In fact, not early stages, they were pretty well along in the construction of these spacecraft. And it got canceled. They said, okay, that's out. We're not going back to the moon. We can't afford it. And we're not going to Mars. And they said, because it's too dangerous. Well, this is the guy right here, Dr. John Holdren. So he is not NASA. And that's very important. For you to keep in mind, he's not NASA. But because he is the director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, because of that, NASA does answer to him at some levels, at some very critical, important levels. So he was there. He was at NASA. He was on hand to watch this phenomenal landing and to be a part of all of that. And then when they interviewed him, he said, well, now, you know, I think the question was asked, what does this mean for the nation? And he said, oh, it's, you know, it's a very proud moment and so forth. And he said, and you know, we are the only nation to ever have landed a lander on another planet. Well, what about those 8 Russian successful landings on Venus, Dr. Holdren? Even before Russia landed anything on Venus, Russia landed on the moon. In 1970, ladies and gentlemen, in 1970, the USSR had a rover on the moon, a robotic rover on the moon. Now, you might say, oh, okay, well, so what? America landed men on the moon. Okay, so the men were on the moon, right? Yeah. And the men The astronauts, I know some of you think they didn't do that, and that's not even the debate, but, you know, let's assume they landed them there. Let's assume the astronauts went to the moon. Okay, so they were there for how long? A few hours. And then they left. And the rovers were up there for a long time and covered a lot of territory. They put one up there in 1970. They put another one, the USSR, put another rover on the moon in 1973, and currently it holds the record for the longest distance of surface travel of any extraterrestrial vehicle, for surface travel. In other words, driving across the surface of some other world. That was in 1973. It still holds the record. Now, you might be asking yourself, well, why is that even important? Well, I'll tell you why in just a moment. Also in 1970, the USSR landed successfully on Venus. And this was the first successful landing of a spacecraft on another planet. Dr. Holdren made the statement on this live broadcast that the USA is the only nation ever to have landed a lander on another planet. That is not true. Now, okay, let's say that the moon is not a planet, so he technically might be true. Well, no, he's not technically true. He's not technically accurate here. In November of 1970, the Russians put a rover on the moon successfully, and they did it again in 73. But November of 70, they have a rover on the moon. In December of 70, 1 month later, they put a lander on Venus. It is the first successful landing of a spacecraft on another planet. Russia has landed successfully on Venus 8 times. Now, the media in the West, I guess, likes to sweep all of that under the carpet. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it's political. Maybe it's because this was during the days of the Soviet Union and, you know, they maybe consider the Soviet Union to be evil. I don't know. But the scientific achievement, the scientific accomplishment that took place in the space program of the Soviet Union should not and cannot be allowed to be swept under the carpet. They landed December of 1970. They landed July of 1972. These are all successful landings. October of 1975. Now, this is where we get the first black and white images of the surface of Venus, with a lander that the USSR successfully landed on Venus, taking pictures of the surface of Venus. Okay, so October 22nd of 75, they land. October 25 of 75, 3 days later, they land again. So now they got two landers. That's a total of 1, 2, 3, and 4. 4 times they've successfully landed on Venus, 4 times in 5 years. And 2 of those they did 3 days apart. December the 21st of 1978, they landed on Venus again. December 25th, 4 days later of 1978, they landed on Venus again. March the 1st, 1982, they successfully landed on Venus again. And this is where we got the first color images of Venus of the surface of Venus. And then on March the 5th, 1982, 4 days later, they landed again. Successfully landed. So 8 times the Soviet Union successfully landed on Venus, and we got photographs from the surface of Venus. They were the first to ever successfully put a robotic rover out there on any heavenly body. That happened in 1970. They put it on the moon. They did it again in 1973. I think that's correct. Let's take a look at that. I believe that it was 1973. And that one still holds the record for the longest distance of surface travel of any extraterrestrial vehicle. And then they proceeded to just knock home run after home run after home run after home run, landing on Venus. Now, they had a lot of failures before they finally succeeded, but when they started succeeding, they were hitting Venus with regularity, sometimes 3 days apart, sometimes 4 days apart. And it was just phenomenal. I mean, the only pictures we have from the surface of Venus are from these Russian or Soviet Union spacecraft that landed successfully, soft landings on Venus. How many times has NASA successfully landed on Venus? Zero. Now, it would not be true to say that they've never put anything on the surface of Venus. They accidentally crashed one onto the surface one time. It was they released 4 probes to do atmospheric studies, and they were designed in such a way that they knew they would just be crushed by the atmospheric pressure as they fell through the atmosphere of Venus, and the pressure increased. One of them made it to the surface intact and transmitted for a few minutes accidentally. It was not a landing, it was a crash. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we're discussing some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, important stuff, about this Mars Curiosity mission, and some really bizarre situations that sort of play into this. It is bizarre, I found it to be bizarre, to hear the statement that these other nations are on Mars because of the United States. I found that to be just totally bizarre. That's one half of the equation. The United States put up the money for it and coordinated it. But that's only half the equation. There are people in other countries that help design and build and do the engineering and make this whole thing happen. So I found that to be bizarre, but I also found it bizarre when Dr. John Holdren, who is the president's chief advisor on science, and he is the director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. This is who's in charge of science policy and technology policy in the United States of America. That's who's in charge, Dr. John Holdren. And I found it bizarre for someone in that position to make the statement that no other nation has ever put a lander on any other planet. Because the history of who was putting things on planets is not recent history. This goes back to 1970. It goes all the way back to 1970 with the Russians putting successfully a rover on the moon. And then in 1973, again successfully putting a rover on the moon, and it still holds the record for the amount of distance of surface travel for any rover put anywhere. And then you have, after the moon, and just shortly after, because, I mean, the first moon rover was put up there in 1970, in November of 1970, and the first lander on Venus happened the next month. And this is bizarre. It's weird. I mean, this is the president's chief science advisor. And if he would make a statement like this, when you have, I mean, come on, this is a total of 10, count them, 10 landers before 1983. From 1970 till 1982, 10 successful landings on other worlds by the Soviet Union. This is not ancient history, but it's old. It has been around a while. And it's not small history. This is gigantic history. What these folks accomplished, NASA has not. NASA's never landed on Venus. Now, that doesn't mean they couldn't. I don't think it means that, but they haven't. And the Russians were landing on Venus successfully and getting pictures from the surface of Venus long, long, long before NASA ever put a rover on Mars. Now, some of you are saying, well, I had no idea that anybody had ever landed on Venus. I had no idea that there were any pictures from Venus. And the fact is, there are. Just do a Google for photos from Venus. You'll find them. They are there, and they are impressive. Now, the first set of photographs to come back from one of their landers, one of the Russian landers, on Venus, that first set of photographs were in black and white. But as time went on, technology improved, and they were able to put color cameras on, and they got color photographs back from the surface of Venus. You know, Venus doesn't look like the sort of place I would want to visit. Mars, well, Mars sort of does. Mars kind of looks like a place I would like to visit. Venus, little bit too hostile for human life, but you could, it'd be tough, but I think you could survive on Mars. The point is, this is not small stuff. And this is the guy who has the president's ear, and he is the science advisor, and he goes on international television and says we're the only nation ever to put a lander on the surface of another planet. Well, let me just let you compare something. Russia, those who are watching, you're looking at photographs from Venus now. And this is from 1982, but these are not the first photographs to come back from Venus. I just chose them because I like them. But this is from Venera 13, and it's March 1, 1982, and then we've got how long before NASA had a lander taking pictures of a surface of something. 1997. 15 years later, NASA put a little shoebox-sized rover on Mars, and it took some pictures. It was called Sojourner. The mission was called Pathfinder. So you see, folks, this is not insignificant. This is not little. This is not insignificant. It plays a huge role, I am certain, in the woes of NASA. How? Well, first I want you to put it in your head that here we have photographs from Venus in 1982. We had photographs much earlier than that, but these are color from 1982. And it's 15 years later before NASA gets its first rover on another planet. And before it has surface pictures from another planet. 15 years. But the real story here is that you got to count the moon. Because in 1970, the Russians had a rover, robotic rover, on the moon. That robotic rover was solar powered and nuclear powered, both. 1970. It was 27 years before NASA put a rover on another planet. Now, this does not diminish what NASA was doing during that period of time. That was during the period of time we were still in the manned space exploration business, and they were sending men to the moon. So I'm not in any way diminishing NASA's accomplishments. I'm talking about what the director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy said. The guy who has the president's ear. The guy who's advising the president on science policy, and he is also the person most responsible for cutting NASA's manned space exploration missions. And he doesn't know that the Soviet Union beat NASA by 27 years when it comes to the robotics, when it comes to landing on the surface of another planet and getting pictures from the surface of another planet. They beat NASA by 27 years. And he doesn't know that? Okay, I'm not a scientist. I'm a talk show host. Compared, when we're talking about science, compared to Dr. Holdren, I'm a nobody. And I know this. If I know this, how is it that the top science guy in America doesn't know this? That is disturbing. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And for those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I am delighted you are here, and oh my, are you going to cry over what you missed in the first hour. You have my sympathy. And here's hoping you never have to suffer that tragedy and trauma again. I asked the question as we went to break. I am a talk show host. I'm not a scientist. I am a talk show host. If I know these facts about space exploration history, which are, by the way, readily available on the internet, if I know this, how is it that the top science guy in America doesn't seem to know this. Now, it's right to be proud of NASA for this accomplishment. This is not a little thing. This is huge. This landing that they did on Sunday night here in the United States. It's huge. It's an absolutely phenomenal achievement. But to say that we are the first nation, the only nation. He said no other nation has ever landed a lander on another planet. And to say that on international television, and you're the top science guy in America. You're the czar. You are the science czar. You are the guy who sets science policy and technology policy for America. You are the guy who killed the missions to the moon, to the return to the moon. You're the guy who killed the planned manned mission to Mars. Now they say they got another mission on now for the mid-2030s. It's easy to say that. You know, this guy's going to be dead by then. And when you're that guy sitting in that chair, and you don't know that not only are we not the only one, we're not the first one, and we were 27 years behind. 27 years behind the Soviet Union in putting a robotic lander on another planet. That's significant. Well, I decided I wanted to take a look and see what I could find out about, okay, so who is this guy? And, you know, how did he get this job? What I found was this is not the only off-the-rails thing he's ever said. What I found was even more disturbing and even more off-the-rails. Because what I found was that he published, he co-authored and published a book back in 1977 called Ecoscience, Population, Resources, Environment. Now, this is the guy who sets science policy and sets technology policy for the United States of America. This is the guy. And in his book, published in 1977, he wrote that women could be forced to abort their pregnancies, whether they wanted to or not. He wrote that the population at large could be sterilized by infertility drugs intentionally put into the nation's drinking water or in food. He said that single mothers and teen mothers should have their babies seized from them by the government against their will and given away to other couples to raise, or perhaps you could give those single mothers and teen mothers the opportunity to apply for adoption of their own babies if they could prove that they were suitable. He said people who, quote, contribute to social deterioration, end quote, in other words, undesirables, quote, can be required by law to exercise reproductive responsibility, end quote. In other words, what he goes on to describe is forced sterilization. He wrote that a transitional planetary regime, and that's a quote from him, planetary regime should assume control of the global economy and also dictate the most intimate details of Americans' lives, using an armed international police force to enforce it. Now, that's disturbing to me, all of that. And there's more. Oh, my God, there's more. But that's disturbing to me on the face of it. As a former international police officer, this suggestion is repugnant to me. And it's repugnant to me because, ladies and gentlemen, as an international police officer, when I was serving, and the way it still works now, we were invited into a country where there had been civil war or a complete breakdown of the government in some way or another, and their police were either non-existent or overwhelmed, and we were invited by that government to come and help them. We were not sent there to take control and to rule. We were invited by that government to come and assist them in restoring order and, civil order and safety for the citizens. We didn't go in there like jackboot thugs and just take over. That whole notion is just repugnant to me. It is against absolutely everything that I know, think, and believe. This guy is sitting in the top chair for science and technology in this country, and he wrote that the international police, an armed international police force, should be used to take over and to install and enforce a world government, a planetary regime. And that's probably what's behind, more than anything else, this consistently nauseous chorus coming out of Washington, D.C., wanting to take everybody's guns. This show's not about that. It's about science, futuristic science, but the guy who's sitting in that chair is for that. Now, it doesn't matter if he comes on television and says Kevin Smith is crazy, I'm not for that, that's a lie. Well, go buy his book. Let me help his book sales out here. You go buy his book and see for yourself. Buy his book and read it for yourself and see what he wrote. That's the guy who's whispering in the president's ear about science and technology. That's the guy who stepped in and killed NASA's return to the moon, he and his committee. That's the guy who stepped in and killed NASA's planned mission on to Mars. That's him. He also wrote that, I find this to be kind of interesting, that capitalism is totally unsuited for a sustainable world. And yet here he is at NASA celebrating the landing of the Mars Curiosity rover, the biggest of its kind, the biggest robotic piece of space equipment ever landed on another planet, the most complicated, sophisticated science laboratory on board ever sent to another planet. And he's there celebrating this great achievement paid for by capitalism. That's who John Holdren is. That's the guy sitting in the top science chair in this country. And, you know, that's the guy who sat there and on international television said The USA is the only nation ever to put a lander on any other planet. Now look, John Holdren is demonstrably a very smart individual. He could not have achieved what he has achieved if he were not a smart individual. But when you're smart and you think it's okay to forcibly sterilize an entire population by putting stuff in their drinking water or their food, when when you're smart and you think it's okay to force single mothers to give up their babies to the government, when you are a smart guy and you think what we need to do is have a global government enforced on the American people by an armed international police force, when you're smart and you put all of that together, you are dangerous. John Holdren, by his own words, is a dangerous man. John Holdren, the guy who made that statement at NASA, you dig into who he is, find out who he is, and you put all of the things that he wrote about and that he said he was for, you put those together with the fact that he's a very smart individual, and you've got a very dangerous man. Extremely so. Because you take how dangerous that is and multiply it hundreds, maybe thousands of times by putting him in the top science policy chair in this country. That makes it even more dangerous. So what's behind the scenes at NASA? Well, there you got it. You don't often get a face to put with extreme danger, but there you go. There's a face to put with extreme danger for the American people. You want to know why we're not going back to the moon? That face. You want to know why we canceled going on to Mars and put it off till 2030? That face. And who is that face? He is, by his own pen, a very dangerous man. Let me give you the name of the book again. I think, you know, we ought to help sell his book. I think you ought to go get it, read it for yourself. I think you ought to see that I'm not making this up. I'm not hyping anything. The guy wrote this stuff. It's called Ecoscience, Population, Resources, and Environment. So go down to your bookstore. It's probably, you probably have to order it now because that was published in 1977. But get it. Read it for yourself. Now, I summarized. I summarized what he said. I want to read you the quote about putting stuff in your water. Here's the quote. One way to carry out this disapproval might be to insist, that's the wrong quote, here we go, adding a sterilant to drinking, this is a quote now from his book, adding a sterilant to drinking water or staple foods is a suggestion that seems to horrify people more than most proposals for involuntary fertility control. Indeed, this would pose some very difficult political, legal, and social questions, to say nothing of the technical problems. No such sterilant exists today, nor does one appear to be under development. That was in 1977, folks. Continuing, to be acceptable, such a substance would have to meet some rather stiff requirements it must be uniformly effective despite widely varying doses received by individuals and despite varying degrees of fertility and sensitivity among individuals. It must be free of dangerous, unpleasant side effects, and it must have no effect on members of the opposite sex, children, old people, pets, or livestock. But all of that is possible now because of genetics. And he's in charge of science and technology in this country. The guy who was at NASA, he does not work for NASA, they work for him, but he was there when they landed this Curiosity rover, and he's the guy who made the statement that we are the only nation ever to put a lander on any other planet. Now, he either was outright lying here, or he is extremely ignorant of the facts. How could you be in charge of NASA, be extremely ignorant of the facts here, and still have the authority to cancel missions and tell them you can't do it? Well, the way you can do that is to be the director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. That's how you do it. So either out of extreme ignorance or just lying to us, he said something that is on the very face of it untrue. We're not the only nation that ever put a lander on another planet. We are not. And in fact, the Russians were 27 years ahead of us. Does the man not know this? Does he not have the internet? Maybe he's not aware that you can go to Wikipedia and look this stuff up. What's up with this? Well, what's up with this is whether he lied to us or whether he is excessively ignorant of the facts. He is the man in charge above the director of NASA. He's the guy that got the manned space exploration killed. That's the guy. And from the words he penned from his own mind, his own hand, the things that are published in his book, he is a dangerous man, in my opinion. The government seems to be quite willing to call everything a terrorist, except themselves. You sneeze wrong and they say you're a domestic terrorist. They probably are saying that about me right now, because I'm exposing who they are, what they're at least one of them. So they're quite willing to call everything terrorism, have everybody in the country living in abject paranoia. Is it not a terrorist thing? Is it not a terrorist threat to threaten a population that you're going to sterilize all of them? To threaten a population that you want a world government and you think an international armed force ought to come in here and make it happen? Is that not a terrorist threat? And that guy said it. That guy published it. And he's getting a paycheck, a big one, as the director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. He's getting a big paycheck from all of you nasty capitalists out there that are working for it. You want to know what's wrong with NASA? I'd start right there. That would be a good place to clean house right there. It's got some other problems, NASA does. We're going to talk about those. I'm going to make some suggestions to NASA, but hey, folks at NASA, I understand the thumb you're working under. I see it. I saw it when you landed on Mars and this guy was on TV talking. Yeah, I see what you have to work under. And you have my sympathy. But folks, if you want to start cleaning NASA up, start at the head. Not just the director of NASA. That's not what I'm talking about. The guy he has to answer to. This man has written some absolutely repugnant and I would say frightening and dangerous things about his vision for you and for me. And he's in a position to make some of this happen now. He's in a position to make some of it happen. Whether he will or not is another story. He certainly is in the position where he can make some of this happen. So you want to clean NASA up? You want to get NASA back to being what you thought they should be, which is sort of the People's Space Agency, civilian space. They're not. They're part of the Department of Defense. But you know, we were all led to believe that they were civilian space exploration, not military. Well, they are military. We know that. You want to get things back to the way it was sold to us? You got to start at the top. This guy's dangerous. And he either outright lied about this landing or he is excessively ignorant. And that guy has the ear of the president on science and technology. He is the expert as far as the president is concerned. We'll be back. Maybe. Right after this.
And you're listening to the Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we're talking about this new rover that has landed on Mars. Congratulations to NASA, and I mean it. I know I've talked a lot about Holdren tonight, but we have to. You need to know not just who are the powers behind the scenes. You got to know who those power, what those powers are all about, who they are, what they've written, what they say. And from my point of view, John Holdren is a dangerous individual because he's so smart. He has such radical ideas about how to control you and me and everybody in America. And he's sitting in a place of power where he can directly affect your life. And he made one of the dumbest statements anybody's ever made, or the biggest lie anybody's ever told, from NASA. He's not a NASA employee. They all eventually answer to him. But during that post-game show, if you will, after they landed on Mars with the Curiosity rover, NASA needs to be liberated from that. NASA needs to be liberated from that. But NASA's history of putting out deceptive information to the public does not start with Dr. John Holdren. NASA's history is a history of making deceptive statements and misleading statements to the public. And that's unfortunate. NASA was sold to the American public as a civilian space effort. It is under the Department of Defense, but it was sold as a civilian space effort. Civilian space agency. In the USSR, it was always military. They made no bones about it, didn't try to hide it. They were out front and honest about it. Here, it started off with deception. And it needs to be cleaned up. You know, NASA has told us things about conditions on Mars that simply are not true. They can't be true. Their own data shows it can't be true. Their own evidence shows it can't be true. And I've talked about this many times. I wrote a book about it. I've done seminars about it. But, you know, NASA says, for instance, that at the surface, and they're talking about a paper-thin layer right down near the surface, like 10 inches above the surface. Seriously. At that altitude of like 10 inches, the surface atmospheric pressure is only 0.7% of what we have here on Earth. That's what they say. And they say that because of that, the atmosphere is so thin, and because of the temperature, you could never, ever have liquid water on Mars. And they say that when ice melts, it never goes through the liquid stage. It melts and goes straight to vapor. It's called the process of sublimation. But pictures from the Phoenix lander, 2009, up near the North Pole, show a series of pictures. There's a series of pictures that show a leg of the Phoenix lander coming at an angle across the picture, and it's the camera's pointed at the ground so we can see the foot at the end of that leg standing right on the surface of Mars. And in this series of pictures, you see water condensing, droplets forming, and trickling. Where it's too cold and the atmosphere is too thin. Liquid water. Now, I brought that up on a show and a guy called in. He said, yeah, but you know, it's probably briny water and the freezing temperature for that is much lower. So it can remain liquid, You know, that's not the issue. The issue is it can't form to start with because the atmosphere is too thin. They say, NASA says, that the oxygen content in the atmosphere of Mars is just a trace amount. It's almost immeasurable. Well, when they were getting ready for this latest landing, they did a weather map of the area, and on the right side of their weather map at the near the bottom you see Gale Crater, and that's where the landing site is. To the left of that we see dust clouds. It's labeled as dust clouds. To the north, I'm making the assumption that the top of the picture is north, although it probably isn't, but straight above Gale Crater in this photograph, there's some more clouds, and they have it labeled water ice clouds. Whether it's ice or whether it's liquid water, it's H2O. And NASA says that the content of oxygen in that atmosphere is so incredibly low, it's just almost non-existent. So how did you get enough of it together to make any kind of water clouds? It's H2O. The O is oxygen. How'd you get enough of that bundled up together to get you some water clouds? Now, this map was August the 4th. It's a weather map of the landing area. August the 4th, and they landed on August 5th or 6th, depending on which side of the planet you're on. You see the point? The point is, their official statement about conditions on Mars don't match the data they release. Furthermore, they say, with regard to the atmosphere, they say that it's only at the surface now, 0.7% of Earth's surface atmosphere. That means, folks, it's 97.3% thinner. 97.3%, almost 100% thinner than Earth's atmosphere. That's what they say. And yet, did you not see all the animations of this landing? And did you not see a parachute? Now look, if it's 97.3% thinner down at the surface, then it's even thinner thousands of feet up in the atmosphere, up where that parachute deployed. How did that parachute work if there's not enough atmosphere? How did the parachute, how does that work if there's just not enough atmosphere? There's almost no atmosphere up there, if their story about the surface atmosphere is correct, if it's true. And not only that, I know you, some of you who are regulars are sick of seeing and hearing about this airplane, but come on, this is important. NASA built an airplane to fly remotely on Mars. They never sent it. It was scheduled, I don't know, two or three times it was scheduled to go. And budget constraints kept them from sending it. The last time, they took that money and used it to launch a communication satellite. So it never went, but it was designed and it was built to fly on Mars. Now, how do you do that if you don't have any air? It's an airplane. It's got wings. It requires a flow of air across those wings in order to fly. How do you do that if you don't have it? You see the point. I mean, you take an airplane. The gravity on Mars is a lot less. It's actually about, I think, 38%, 40% of what we have here on Earth. But let's just use 50% just to make this easy. And let's say that that airplane weighs 100 pounds here on Earth. On Mars, then it would weigh 50 pounds, same airplane, because the gravity is different. So, to make this easy, whatever the amount of airflow it takes over those wings for that airplane to have lift here on Earth, it takes 50% of that on Mars. And according to NASA, you don't have it. You don't even have 1%. How are you going to fly that airplane? Now, what that means, of course, is that NASA knows something about the conditions on Mars they're not telling us. The conditions on Mars are far more Earth-like than they tell us. They have to be. You couldn't fly an airplane. You couldn't use a parachute. You couldn't have liquid water, and we know from their own pictures there is liquid water at the surface. So there are conditions on Mars that are far more Earth-like than they tell us. Now, don't go say that I said that it's Earth-like. It's not. And for you and me, it would be a hostile environment, a tough environment. But it's far more Earth-like than what they tell us. You also have the scientists from the Phoenix lander that scooped up dirt and tested it, and the scientists said that dirt is just like the dirt in your backyard. You could probably grow asparagus in it. You see, it's far more Earth-like than what they tell us. The question is, with this new lander, is NASA going to be more open and honest? With this new mission, are they going to be telling us more truth about Mars than they've ever told us before? Well, we can hope so, and I do hope so. I pointed out, however, right at the beginning, that if you go to the MSL, that's the Mars Science Laboratory, go to that website. It's a NASA website. You will see right across the top of the page a banner, a masthead. And what you have is you have Mars in the background, and you have this Curiosity rover, an artist's conception of it, sitting on the surface of Mars. But if you look at that picture, you see that they still made the sky red. And we know now, for sure, the sky on Mars is blue just like it is here on Earth. They're still red filtering the picture that's the masthead for this mission. That doesn't seem to me to indicate they plan to tell us much truth. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach. We only have a few minutes left, and there is yet one more thing I want to wrap up here. You know, I mentioned that if you just go to that website for this Mars Science Laboratory, that's what it's called. That's the Curiosity rover. You go to the NASA website for that, and you will see right across the top of the page a photograph, a masthead. It's a photograph of Mars, and it is red filtered. Now, this is something NASA has been doing to Mars photographs since they've been going to Mars. They've been making it look like the sky is red and everything is just this dusty, indistinct red. But I have shown on this show repeatedly. I've shown it in seminars. I demonstrate it in my book. That is an imposed red haze. That's something added to the photograph. That's not what the camera saw. And you can just take one of their pictures that's got that red sky and put it into Photoshop. You can put it into other programs. We'll do this. And you auto-level it. It gets rid of the red haze. And when it gets rid of the red haze, you have a light blue sky and you see crystal clear details of what's on the ground. Now, in the picture that they release with that red haze in it, you don't see crystal clear images of what's on the ground. They're fuzzy, they're hazy. You can see there's some rocks down there. You take that red haze out of there, and it becomes crystal clear. You can see what their camera saw. Now, they've been doing this for a long time. Based on what's on top of the page at the Mars Science Laboratory webpage, again, that's a NASA website, NASA webpage, based on the picture they've got right at the top, I would say they intend to continue doing that. I would say they don't have any intention of straightening up and flying right when it comes to telling us the truth about Mars. There's so much truth about Mars that they know that they won't tell you already. There's so much truth about Mars that they're already obscuring and have been obscuring for decades. It appears they intend to continue based on that image at the top of their webpage. If they didn't intend to keep obscuring things, that image at the top of the webpage wouldn't have that red haze in it. They have obscured things right there. So it indicates to me they intend to continue as per usual. So if NASA's ever going to straighten up, the first thing that's got to happen is you got to get somebody straight in that top chair that we talked about earlier. But then you got to go through NASA and you got to clean out this culture of deception. Can it be done? Yeah, it can be. Will it be done? I'm betting it won't be. So we're still going to have to study their images. We're still going to have to dehaze their images. We're still going to have to pay attention to what they say and what they don't say. That's sometimes screaming louder than what they say, in order to find out what's really up with Mars. But I'll tell you, what's really up with Mars is far different than what they tell us. Their official statements don't match their own data. Data you can see with your own eyes. Their official statements do not tell us the truth about the conditions on Mars. They say they're looking with this mission for the building blocks of life on Mars. You know something? They already know there has been life on Mars. They may know there is life there now. Remember when Spirit Rover found what looked like a little seashell embedded in rock, and all the press was agog and agoo-goo over it? What did they do? They sent the Spirit Rover over to that little seashell embedded in rock. They extended an arm out of the rover, and it had a grinder on it, and they ground it down to nothing. If there's a seashell there, and there are pictures that show seashells, really, and some big ones, laying all over the ground on Mars. If there's a seashell there, you don't have to see if there were ever building blocks of life and whether life ever could have existed. There's seashells. Life existed. They already know that. They're denying it, but they know it. You saw it, I saw it, the world press saw it. We know. A cow is not a Cadillac. That seashell is a seashell. So we already know about that. We're already completely aware. They may know that there's life on Mars now. I don't know that. They may know it. So what is this really all about? It cannot be that they are looking for the building blocks of life to see if it was ever possible for life to have existed. They already know. And like I said, I know it, you know it. So what is this really all about? I want to congratulate the people at NASA again. There are things about NASA that I absolutely adore. There are things about NASA that are pretty hard to swallow. The lies, the deception to the American people and the world public, that's hard to swallow. And it can be verified that you're doing it, NASA. It's easy to verify that. That's hard to swallow. Your accomplishment in making this very, very complex and difficult landing on Mars and doing it successfully, that is something nobody can ever take from you. You did it. Congratulations. And wow, what a fantastically smart group of people you are. And I mean that. The rest of this stuff needs to be cleaned up. And it needs to be cleaned up real soon. You need to start telling the people the truth. Or at least, for God's sake, get better cover story writers. You need better script writers, because your stuff just comes apart at the seams. And I could do it. I could write you better scripts, but I won't. I won't help you do it. But there are people that could write you better scripts than what you're using, believe me. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this evening. Congratulations to NASA again. What a marvelous achievement this is. I don't know what it's all about, but it's not about finding the building blocks of life. They maybe will do some of that science. I'm sure they will. But that's not what this is all about. It can't be. They already know. If there's seashells, there was life. If there was life, there was the building blocks. Right? So I don't know what it's all about yet. We'll find out in the days, weeks, months, and years ahead. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You may call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.